Hi, welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Justine Toe. Well, in 2008, Prime Minister Kevin Rudd made an historic apology to members of the Stolen Generation. He said sorry that the laws and policies of successive Australian governments forcibly separated families and caused immense grief, suffering, and spiritual alienation among Aboriginal Australians. Kevin Rudd then committed Australia to a future of reconciliation and reparation to its First Peoples.
We apologise for the laws and policies of successive parliaments and governments that have inflicted profound grief, suffering and loss on these our fellow Australians. We apologise especially for the removal of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children from their families, their communities and their country. For the pain, suffering and hurt of these stolen generations, we say sorry. We today take this first step by acknowledging the past and laying claim to a future that embraces all Australians.
Now, 7 years on, what has changed? Kevin Rudd himself has said that the apology hasn't actually achieved much. We're glad that we can ask Brooke Prentice how she sees the matter. She's a descendant of the Waka Waka people of what we now call Queensland. She's also a Christian pastor, activist for Aboriginal justice with Common Grace, and an accountant. Brooke, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
What are your memories of the apology you made back then? How did it feel?
For me, it was really a point in time where we could stop as a country and reflect on parts of the true history of our country, the combined history that we have as Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people. It was a significant time of healing for Aboriginal people because we finally got an apology that we had been after for hundreds of years. So on that day, it was really a moment to stop and reflect and think about all of those Aboriginal leaders that have gone before me and fought for justice and truth for so many years.
In the second half of the apology, Kevin Rudd talked a lot about the future. He said that in the future, past injustices would never happen again. All Australians would be truly equal, regardless of where they've come from. Now, he's now said that the apology has, so far, had meagre, his quote, impact. Do you think that the apology has achieved anything, or are those grand hopes still as relevant today as they were back then?
Those grand hopes are still as relevant today as they were back then. With the apology came that great point of time in our modern history, but when I reflect on it now, our people that were affected by the Stolen Generations are still very much suffering trauma and grief, as you would. We now talk about the new Stolen Generation. So for us, it's nearly like our hopes and our dreams have been dashed because we're still having the same conversations and trying to protect the next generations from being removed from their families as well, which is still causing so much grief in our communities. And I guess the other thing to reflect on the apology, a lot of non-Aboriginal people that I talk to are like, oh, well, we've said sorry, but we only said sorry for the stolen generations. We didn't say sorry for stolen land or stolen wages. Still, pretty much 99% of people that I talk to have never heard of the concept of stolen wages. And so we still have so much truth-telling to do in our country, and we're still fighting so many areas of injustice facing us as Aboriginal people.
Actually, just on that point, Brooke, do you want to tell us a little bit about the stolen wages, just in a nutshell?
Yeah, so I guess when you particularly look, I'll speak to the Queensland stolen wages in the first instance, but it did happen across the country. So right up until about 1972, wages that were supposed to have been paid to Aboriginal people were given to chief protectors of Aborigines or to the government and were never paid back to the people in the form of their actual wages. So many of our people for several generations worked for things like rations, and that money that they were supposed to be paid was held in government accounts.
It's a real injustice, isn't it, that has just continued to reverberate today?
That's right, and it's estimated there was over $500 million in Queensland alone.
Wow, that's stunning. Australian governments often talk about, you know, closing the gap. This is the language that's used between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal Australia. Now, what would need to change in order for the gap to actually close? You know, what does justice look like for Aboriginal people?
I think we really need a mindset change in our country that the government continues to not build the correct relationships with us, not come and sit down with us and yarn with us. I believe so many of the solutions to issues that our community are facing are within our community, but the government continues to not listen to us, as the church also needs to do a lot more listening. So, you know, a lot more time needs to be made to actually talk with us, not this paternalistic view where non-Indigenous people might know better.
Your life calls upon you to, you know, move in different worlds and mix with a lot of different people. You've got a finance background. You also do a lot of social activism through TR, Voices for Justice. I hear you also are the organiser of an Aboriginal Christian ministry called Grass Tree Gathering. How optimistic are you that people who come from very different backgrounds and perspectives can work and live well together? You know, is reconciliation a realistic hope?
People often ask me about this word, reconciliation, and it's a word that I find difficult at the best of times. I prefer to call it friendship, that we actually need to be working on friendship between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people, because with friendship, it's about relationship, but actually listening and learning from each other, not just from one side. And that's what I think we really need to be doing. And yes, a lot of people have told me that that's extremely difficult, that reconciliation can never happen. But when we have that attitude, of course it's not going to happen. For me, it's about building an Australia that's built on truth and love and justice, and that's when we can have hope for a better future for all Australians. It's not just for us as Aboriginal people, but all sectors of Australia, but particularly for Aboriginal people, it's vitally important.
And do you have any experiences that give you hope that things might be changing?
Well, one of my experiences has been I talk in a few different high schools across the country, and one of the surprising things for me is often when I talk, high school-aged students come up to me and simply say sorry, and say sorry with tears in their eyes, sorry that they never knew these things that I'm talking about. So there isn't a barrier for that next generation as they're starting to hear these stories. And I think that's a very powerful thing that's happening. And I think there's a real hope in the next generation. And I do also want to acknowledge there are some non-Aboriginal people that have walked with us for many years in our fight for justice. And I also pay respects to them.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. We're talking about reconciliation for National Sorry Day. Now, a prayer was written by the Aboriginal and Islander Commission from the National Council of Churches in Australia. Let's have a listen.
Almighty and loving God, you who created all people in your image, lead us to seek your compassion as we listen to the stories of our past. You gave your only Son, Jesus, who died and rose again so that sins will be forgiven. We place before you the pain and anguish of dispossession of land, language, law, culture, and family kinship that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples have experienced. We live in faith that all people will rise from the depths of despair and hopelessness. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander families have endured the pain and loss of loved ones through the separation of children from their families. We are sorry and ask your forgiveness. Touch the hearts of the broken, homeless, and afflicted, and heal their spirits. In your mercy and compassion, walk with us as we continue our journey of healing to create a future that is just and equitable. Lord, you are our hope. Amen.
I'm Justine Toe, and my guest is Brooke Prentice, a descendant of the Waka Waka people from Queensland. She's also a Christian pastor and a social justice activist. Now, it's Reconciliation Week, Brooke, not quite Friendship Week that you were talking about. Is there a spiritual friendship in some ways that needs to happen between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people to make justice more than a matter of policy?
Often what happens in our country is that non-Aboriginal people simply don't know Aboriginal people. The statistic I've heard is that about 90% of non-Aboriginal Australians don't know an Aboriginal person. So when we don't know each other, we're getting our information from sources like the media, and that's not painting a true reflection of our communities. And, you know, Reconciliation Week, a lot of people, non-Aboriginal people, don't even know about Reconciliation Week. And, you know, it runs from the 27th of May to the 3rd of June, both two very important dates in our combined histories, the 27th of May being the commemoration of the 1967 referendum, and the 3rd of June being the Mabo case, where the lie that our country has lived up until 1992, the lie of terra nullius, was finally overturned.
The idea of empty land, you mean?
Yep, land belonging to no one, whereas we now know that in 1788, it's estimated there were 1 million Aboriginal people across this land. From my perspective, I am a member of the Churches Together Indigenous Peoples Partnership, and we're running reconciliation services in most of the major regional centres in southeast Queensland. But it'll be interesting how many people actually attend those, because it's a lot of Aboriginal people will get involved in these. But if we're really about bringing reconciliation, non-Aboriginal people have to come on the journey with us. And that's whether they know an Aboriginal person or they don't. Non-Aboriginal people have to learn more about the true history that has not been taught properly in our schools and still has a long way to go in being taught effectively in our schools.
The British brought with them Christianity, and it seems that from the perspective of your average person on the street, they would consider Christianity to be, I guess, like a white person's religion. How are we to make sense of someone like yourself, for example, as a Christian Aboriginal woman?
It is a complicated path to walk when you're thinking about it from a Western culture and often a non-Christian perspective as well. But for us as Aboriginal Christians, God works that all out for us. So there actually isn't a conflict. A lot of people don't realise that about 62% of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people identify as Christian. That's why we can come together in things like the Grass Tree Gathering across language barriers and across different church barriers, because we come from all different denominations, and it's a real time of togetherness.
In a sermon that you gave recently at a church in Queensland, you said, and I quote, "We are faced with so much adversity, including racism, highest rates of suicide in the world, life expectancy gaps, statistics that have us on an equal footing with some third world countries, statistics that have faces and names. Our only hope is Jesus." Now, people may be really stunned to hear you say that in the face of Aboriginal disadvantage, Jesus is the only hope. Why do you believe that?
For me, it's because Jesus stood for love, and if we truly love one another, then we wouldn't have things like racism. But Jesus also stood for justice, and he knows exactly what has happened in this country at the point of colonisation and every point in time since colonisation as well. As well as for Jesus, it's the over 60,000 years before Western culture landed on our shores. And so, you know, this last 227 or so years is just a blimp in time in God's perspective. And, you know, when you sit down and talk with some of our elders and you go through our dreaming stories that talk about creation, you know, for us as Christians, that's God's creation. He placed us here as Aboriginal people, as his custodians and stewards of the beautiful and wonderful land that he created, and the beautiful people that he created to look after this land. And I think we did a very good job for over 60,000 years, and still continue to try to do that today. And God left us here as the oldest living culture in the world for a reason.
In light of that, what role do you think Christians might have to play in seeking reconciliation?
I think Christians have to work better at living out love for our neighbour. And our neighbour is also our brother and sister. Often I sometimes think that Christians step over Aboriginal people to reach out to their overseas neighbour and don't realise that
their neighbour is in their midst, do you mean?
Right next to them.
Yeah. Well, Brooke, you've talked about how there is great power in listening and learning from each other, and how this goes to a friendship that maybe surpasses reconciliation, and how also a commitment to listening and learning from each other is perhaps the true path to justice and healing in this country. It's very simple to say, but also very hard to do. We want to thank you for the challenge and for sharing your wisdom and perspective on this matter today.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Thanks for your company. See you next time.